on the earth. There's no girls that kissed me first, but you just stand there with a smirk, listening to the latest episode of Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up, man?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. Your voice sounds much more buttery now than it did a minute ago. What was the instant fix there?
Just coughing and clearing my throat a bunch. I don't know what happened there. I just ate, so maybe it was like residual food. I don't know. That's not a thing. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't think residual food in your mouth is a thing. And if it is, you...
Diagnosis residual food.
Yeah, please don't speak with food in your mouth on the podcast.
I've got an apple here ready to go.
Yeah. Thank goodness we have a guest today so that...
Pick up
you
the
can
slack.
Get your snacks in and mute the microphone. Today, we discuss a group that believes no one ever really dies. Today, we're discussing an act and an album, really a pair of albums, that were a fusion of early 2000s alt-rock and hip-hop, an important genre bender that laid the way for plenty of acts to follow and told critics to take their preconceptions elsewhere. They also approached, I guess, teen and young adult struggles, even though they were 30 at the time, with a combination of sensitivity and verve. Today, we're discussing Pharrell Williams' N.E.R.D. and their 2004 album, Fly or Die. Was a clip from Thrasher, which is featuring Lenny Kravitz off the album Fly or Die from N.E.R.D. Today, we are joined by the Steve Jobs / Steph Curry / Kurt Cobain / Jimi Hendrix / Jimmy Butler of this rock shit, Denz McFarlane, the vocalist and guitarist of the OBGMs. What's up, man?
All true. All of them are factual names. And it's not like, you know, like, I'm not like the black Kurt Cobain. I am Kurt Cobain, that's the thing. So I really want to make sure I define that for everybody, for all the people, all the listeners. What's up, man? How you guys doing?
Denz, I had one question for you. You had mentioned before that you worked with our friend Stephen Babcock of Pup a little bit in the songwriting process. What went into that, or what was that like?
It was incredible, man. Like, it was incredible and it was humbling. Stephen Babcock, and I say this with all respect, is a psychopath. And I mean that in the best way. You know why? Because this guy breathes music. And I think everybody that wants to pursue music at a high level needs to operate in a similar fashion to that. This guy breathes it. We got linked through our producer, Dave Schiffman, who pitched to us, the OBGM, was like, yo, Denzel, you want to do, is there any way you want to think about maybe expanding some of your ideas? And at that time, I was John Lennon, man. I'm like, expand what? I'm the best. Okay, sure. I guess I'll talk. I guess I'll talk to the Stephen Babcock guy, whoever he is. Well, we definitely know who the guys are. These are Toronto legends in general. But we got connected. He's on a 7-week tour in Europe, and I sent him a bunch of demos. And literally, like the day after, he would send us our songs played again. Just like, have you ever tried this melody? Have you ever tried this, that, or the other? Have you ever tried this exchange? Just to build on it. And you gotta realize that this guy is at the other side of the world, just getting off stage. You have to be very, very tired because you're playing shows every night, if not one, if two, maybe every night. And you're in your off time, you're spending it with OBGM tracks. Like, you're a psychopath. Yo,
that's amazing. It's hilarious too. Like knowing Steve, the guitarist, like Steve is going off stage and trying to catch the Raptors highlights without spoilers. And Stefan's sitting down to help you guys out.
I was going to say, it's a good thing you didn't get hooked up with Steve. Stefan's the better sure.
I at Steve regularly. I'm watching it. I'm watching his comments on Twitter. They're always in line with how I feel.
You should be worried about that, man.
I back him. I back him. But like, it was amazing because it was really motivational, because you have a guy that has really no cards in this, but he's literally going as hard on our stuff as like he goes on pub stuff. This is what this guy does. And when you think of it like that, you have to step your game up. I felt like he's trying to one up us, because he sent in 4, 5, and 6 ideas on our songs that I've never thought of before. And it really, really helped push me as a songwriter. And honestly, I can't wait to do it again. Like, I think we got a real good vibe. He's taught me so much. And like, for the 3 songs that he's on, like, I don't want that to be like the amount that he meant to this record. I changed my whole approach to songwriting after listening to this guy. He gave a lot of great tips on just how to approach songs, how to approach enunciation, how to approach the impact points of songs that like I'm going to remember forever. And like, wow, I can't say enough about how amazing this guy is. He's literally an icon, and everybody should aspire to be him, the true Kurt Cobain of music. the true guy. He won't say it to you, but I'll tell you it's him.
Oh yeah, no, he would hate it if he heard you saying this stuff about him. He would. I don't think there's any way Stefan listens to this podcast. He probably hears enough.
No, he's busy helping out songwriters. He's not going to listen to our dumbasses.
Yeah, and building cabins and stuff. Whatever Stefan does. Dan, the way we start all these off is big picture. Why this album for you? When we were kicking around ideas of what to do when you came on.
I find like, this is one of the albums, if not the album, that kind of pushed me overboard as to saying, I want to start a band. I saw what NERD were doing, and they were producers. We were producers at the time, and they just wanted to do something different. And like, I feel like every person that really loves music has an artist that they're just completely on the same wavelength as. Like, whatever they put out, like, that speaks to your frequency. And this album was something that just really spoke to mine. But like, it didn't speak to a lot of people, man. They were 20 years before their time. and that's kind of why I wanted to talk. They were 20 years before their time. Like, I remember reading reviews when this album came out, and it was like universally panned. And I was like, are these people living on the same planet? Like, this is genius. These guys are geniuses.
Yeah, so, we're going to get into. I picked a few clips out of the some of the worst reviews for a little later.
Yeah, universally panned album, but I thought it was incredible. It's one of the. If I was going to pick most influential albums in my life, it's definitely top 3.
Awesome, Jake. What about you, man? Do you have any connections to this one, or were you kind of diving into it for the first time in a while?
Yeah, more the latter. I definitely remember it when it came out, and I remember all the press around them, for better and for worse. I think I've talked a lot on the show about how when I was younger, I was very much sort of in my niche, and this obviously was not in that niche, so it was never anything that was like a big statement for me. But I remember taking notice of it basically through like, I guess, Rolling Stone or Spin articles, where I know we'll talk about this, but all the attitude was like, hip hop guys playing rock music? That's crazy.
Yep.
And
yeah.
But I remember thinking as a young person who was like trying to discover my own musical taste and identity, I remember finding that interesting, but it wasn't enough in my very narrow view of music for it to like really stick with me. But going back to it this week has been like, I can't believe how 2020 it sounds. Like, it's crazy.
Yep, they were way before their time, and it sucks. I personally don't want that to be my own legacy, where, like, you know, you're making different stuff. You're making different stuff, and, you know, it's not appreciated at the time. But, like, if 20 years later, somebody might be like, man, that's amazing. Like, fuck that shit. Give the people what they're comeuppance right now. What they deserve right now, you know?
Yeah, like, I'm sure it's cool for Pharrell to, like, hear himself, or all these guys to hear themselves in, you know, Lil Uzi Vert or in Tyler, the Creator, or Brockhampton, yep, or whoever, and, like, be like, okay, yep, clearly these guys listen to NERD. But, you know, at the time, it wasn't the same. For me, so I was, I actually got in on NERD on In Search Of, which came out in 2002. That was a nice bridge for me because, like I've talked about on this podcast before, I was kind of the only one of my friends in high school who listened to a lot of the punk and alt rock stuff, and most of my friends listened to hip hop. And then, like, I was into skate culture and stuff like that, but most of my friends played basketball, and I ended up, like, managing our basketball team when I got hurt playing another sport. So, like, this album, In Search Of, in 2002, which has, like, Rockstar and Lap Dance, that was, like, this perfect middle ground between what I was doing and what I was into and what a lot of my friends were doing and what they were into, and kind of it bridged that gap a little bit between musical tastes. And then obviously it just, like, this album fits well if you're playing basketball, if you're skateboarding, whatever. It doesn't, like, it's a pretty versatile album in that regard. But to have something that kind of split the difference between me and my friends at that time in high school was, I say it meant a lot, mostly just because I wasn't getting chirped for playing, like, My Chemical Romance and Fall Out Boy and stuff. But it was also
great bands.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it was, like, honestly, I think, you know, like, I wasn't conscious of it at the time, but reflecting on it now, like, it's probably one of the bigger gateway albums for me into checking out more hip hop because, oh, if, you know, if the Neptunes are making stuff like this, you know, maybe there's a lot more in that sphere that I'll mess with as well. So, I mean, I obviously like Fly or Die as well, but In Search Of was the one that hit a little bit more for me. We're going to talk more about Fly or Die after this. All right, so a little background. Early 90s, late teens Pharrell and his childhood friend Chad Hugo, along with Timbaland and Magoo, had a hip-hop group called Surrounded by Idiots. That predated the Neptunes, which was Pharrell, Hugo, Shea Haley, and Mike Etheridge. And it was originally supposed to be like an R&B-ish group, and they got discovered and signed by Teddy Riley. But then Teddy Riley mostly had them, like, producing and doing some ghostwriting work. So, like, Pharrell wrote Riley's verse on Rump Shaker, and then Pharrell and Hugo basically, you know, they dropped the R&B group aspect and they just became the Neptunes, this incredible production duo that was doing early work for, like, Blackstreet and Noriega and Clips and Mystical and Janet Jackson and Khalees. But they still want to be a band. And so NERD was formed in 2001, which was Williams, Hugo, and Haley all kind of doing a little bit of everything. And at the start, mostly doing electronic music and then having a band play for them if they were playing live or going over top of it. Eventually, they'd pivot to them all playing their own instruments, but that wasn't until Fly or Die. They also had male and female dancers and touring members, which is a funny thing to picture. Just, you know, you have six touring dancers with you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you guys going to get on that too? You can have, like, moshers for you guys.
I want the interpretive dance. That's what I'm looking for.
All right. Yeah. Jake, you can audition, man. You got more dance chops than I have.
I'm not sure I do.
So in 2001, In Search Of, the album that I was just talking about before the break, was released in the UK, and then it was released in 2002 worldwide. And on that second version, they replaced some of that electronic production with live backing from a band called Spy Mob. That album produced three singles: Lap Dance, Provider, and the one that was the big one for me and what put me onto NERD, Rockstar.
Poses.
Yeah. I love that beat so much. Jake, do you remember that music video at all?
No.
Dens, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. They were playing in the gym.
Yeah. So Randy Quaid, Jake, is this like jerk gym teacher bullying the kids.
Yeah.
And then it breaks down into like there's a monkey hanging on the rim blocking everyone's shots. And there's like a quarter pipe for skating eventually. And it's
for some reason, all I needed to hear was Randy Quaid. And I was like, oh, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. The short old school gym shorts. What a mess of a video. But it like entirely captures the spirit of that song. And I think what they were doing at that time and, you know, who they were trying to reach kind of when you think of. You know, especially on Fly or Die lyrically, the type of like teen they're trying to reach with this stuff. Dens, did you like, were you listening to them in Search of Error, or did you really more come to them when Fly or Die came out?
Yeah. So the first time I heard about NERD was actually the reissue, like the Rocky reissue, just like the one you just played there for In Search Of. I actually didn't realize that they did it as a fully electronic first. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, how does people not love this? Like, I'd never heard anything like it before. The Neptunes, which were the biggest producers in the world at that time and for a long time after, made a rock band. Incredible.
I mean, that album In Search Of was very well received, and like a lot of modern artists have said that it influenced them, or it's very obvious that it influenced them. In Vulture in 2018, Vulture wrote about their cult popularity and wrote, in the early 2000s, the two dominant genres of music, hip hop and alternative rock, could not have existed on more isolated poles of the music spectrum and very rarely came together with any cohesion. NERD's sensibility could be seen as chiefly concerned with striking that balance. So, I mean, obviously there was a lot of like rap rock and stuff around that time, but that didn't really have the same kind of hip hop and funk vibe to what was going on in alt rock that NERD had. So the big change heading into Fly or Die was that the members started playing the instruments live themselves instead of having a backing band. So Hugo was just learning the guitar, Pharrell was playing the drums, and that, whether that change was a songwriting change or like a conscious change, or it was just because of the new musicianship or whatever, this Fly or Die has a bit more of like a funk sound to it than that kind of alt rock song. Dens, what was the, you know, if you're comparing these two albums, what stands out to the most to you about Fly or Die relative to In Search Of?
In Search Of is more of a rougher album. The reissue is a rougher album because like the standout track there is Rockstar. You also got Lap Dance on there. So you got a lot more distortion on that album. Whereas Fly or Die, they made it way more funky. Like the harmonies that you'll find are very, very George Clinton-esque, Ohio Players-esque. And you don't really find that as much on In Search Of. Yeah, so I'd say that's the main difference. Like, they got real funky with it. They didn't rely on drumming as much. Like, because, like, I mean, In Search Of, you got a lot of cool drum licks that are just all the way through it. And Fly or Die, a lot of it's just like keeping it simple, staying within the pocket, listen to the music more, listen to the guitars more. It's more guitar driven.
Right. And I think, you know, the fact that they had at least somewhat immediate success, we'll talk about how this album wasn't a huge success in general, but right out of the gate, you get that newer vibe with the first single, She Wants to Move, which went top five in the UK, and immediately they're having this success in the UK for a second straight album. It was a little more modest in the US, which was weird to me to go back and look that like She Wants to Move wasn't a big hit in the US, because I remember hearing this song pretty much everywhere at the time. You'll surely remember this is She Wants to Move. Now, Jake, I know you heard that one, whether you were listening this stuff at that time or not. Like, that was everywhere.
Yeah, it's the classic Pharrell. This song that I wrote is just going to be on the radio for the next couple of years, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That start to it is just, like, very Neptunes-esque right out of the gate.
Yeah,
right?
And it's, like, it's crazy to me listening to it now and looking back on it, or not even looking back on it, actually, just thinking about it in the context of today, how so much of, like, the early 2000s-ish is currently being re-examined or revived in music, like whether it's the constant non-stop think pieces on nu metal or, you know, pop punk or ska or any of that. It's weird to me that we haven't had an NERD, like, if not revival, at least like the kids discovering it or something, because it's so, I can't get over how modern it is. And also how, to your point, how it didn't hit back then. Cause while it sounds modern, it also fully sounds of its time. And I find that very odd in a way. And like, maybe it's cause like of the way it was marketed or the press it got, or just like the general attitudes towards like rock music at the time or hip hop at the time or both. But
certainly the way that this was received by like critics and stuff was like, there was like a bit of a, maybe not eye roll to it, but like they very much made it seem like, oh, look at this like quirky thing, and didn't engage with it as like the art that it was. Like I'm retrofitting that explanation based on some of the reviews that I found, but like it doesn't.
But that's what I think is so crazy about it, because like it's not like this was a new thing. Like there's been the blending of rock music and hip hop for decades before this.
Like, and whether it doesn't sound like a novelty, it sounds
hit
songs.
And I think it's, I don't know if ironic is the right word or just expected, but like I was a big like Rolling Stone reader. And that's where I got a lot of my more mainstream, in air quotes,
it's where you got your personality. Moves. Just,
but like they were so dismissive of it. But then the next page would be like, check out the new Beastie Boys record, or let's look back at Run DMC and Aerosmith. And it's like, not that those are the only blendings of hip hop and rock music ever, but like, they're so praised by the same people that dismissed this. And I think that's nuts.
Why do you think that is, Jake? What is the big difference between
there's one difference I can think of.
Yeah, I mean,
you, their blackness, you were black.
like yes. if you wanted to give those reviewers the absolute most benefit of the doubt, you could frame it as like, oh, well, they're coming at it as like, because Rolling Stone's more of a rock magazine, it's like, oh, look at these rock bands taking this hip hop element instead of the other way around. But yeah, it's because of the blackness, really. And like, you know, I think it says a lot that Pharrell had his most success as an artist. Obviously, as a producer, he had massive success all across the board. But like once he started doing his solo stuff, and it was like large, like Fly or Die is really moody and goes into some mental health stuff and some teen angst stuff and some even some political stuff. And then Pharrell has this massive success later in his career when like the hit singles are like these really happy go lucky songs.
We want to hear Get Lucky. We don't want to hear.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a surprise that Pharrell, not that those are like bad songs, but like, they're much more like they're simpler songs and less challenging songs, certainly. But I don't think they're as good as the songs that they put out on these first two NERD albums. So I don't think that's really surprising. And Dan's obviously, that's something you could speak to a little bit more. I know you've been really outspoken about the way, especially the punk scene treats black artists, and you guys as a black fronted punk band. Do you see some of that with NERD and how they got kind of marketed and received looking back at it?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember reading interviews of Pharrell post Fly or Die, and Into Seeing Sound, so the album after this. And he was wondering why his album had to be marketed the way it was. At the time, they were still really trying to drive this to the hip hop community and not necessarily the alternative community. And that's why She Wants to Move was the first single. All right, we think the hip hop community would be okay with this. You're the biggest producer of the year. We just finished, I think around that time, it was like Justified. So you're the biggest producer maybe of all time at that time. Justified, Frontin', Excuse Me Miss, like all those tracks were around that time. So people were having a tough time wrapping their head around Pharrell can do other things. And unfortunately, as a black artist, and it's still to this day, if you are making alternative music, since you are not necessarily represented in that space as often, people have a hard time accepting you in that space. Unless you really go above and beyond to try to sound like what's in that space, which is just not natural. You know, so that's definitely what he was going through that time. They put him in the wrong box, and that's what happened. Like, it didn't become the biggest album as it should have.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously that's your experience more than mine, but that's certainly how it looks from the outside and looking back at it too, as a white person. Like, it's not really a great explanation other than that. I mentioned earlier that, you know, the contrast between where Pharrell will go as a solo artist in terms of lyric and tone is really present on Fly or Die. And I actually, like, admittedly, because this album came out when I was, 18 or something like that, and like, it was something I listened to, but wasn't like I didn't spin this as much as In Search Of, for sure. And I kind of misunderstood the title until I went back and revisited. And I thought, you know, Fly or Die in my head was like similar to Fresh to Death, right? Like, it's like, you're going to be fly or you may as well die. But really, you listen to that, you listen to these songs, and there's a lot of teen angst stuff and challenging what you're going through in your late teens or early 20s from a mental health aspect. You know, there's the outro on that song, It Won't Be Long, Gasping for Air Makes the Righteous Path Harder to Choose, Fly or Die, Sink or Swim, Which One to Choose. And it's a lot deeper than that. Yeah, there are a couple other tracks like that too. I know Maybe Dens is, which features Lenny Kravitz and Questlove on it. I know that's one of your favorite tracks, and that's kind of a moodier breakup song as well.
Love was the egg. See, and it was born in a cloud with silver. Hatched on the ground, so time flew right by me. And voila, I know you thought your life was gonna be easy when you didn't call. You found that you were wrong. See, I know you thought your but a joke, and it laughs on me. It's funny, right?
The album's filled with classics. Maybe is like when I think about early OBGMs, and like I don't give this a much. I don't say this as much because I like to say that we're never influenced by anybody. But I was trying to make songs like Maybe over and over again, ballads that are just beautiful that fuse all of those things. I was trying to do that. It just hits different. It's just a different take on music, and it's really really brave to do something like that. Like I don't know how much more I could say it. Like. There is not an album out that sounds like this at all. There's not an album that sounds like this. Just phenomenal work. I don't know what to say, man. It's just completely diverse album. A lot of different types of tracks, all different types of lyrics. Fly or Die, I took it as Fly Away.
Right.
From whatever troubles are going through right now. Because you have to escape because of what's happening inside or what's happening in your home. And that's kind of the take I took from the album.
Yeah, that makes sense too. And you know, you said nothing else sounds like this, and it's so good and unique. Well, you know, a song like Maybe, which is this, you know, good and somewhat challenging ballad, then it gets sampled by Lupe Fiasco and like Clips does a version of it on a mixtape. And you know, it was another one of those ones that was like pretty big in the UK and not in the US, and I don't have a good explanation why they kept having success in the UK and not in the US. But Jake, when you went back to this, obviously She Wants to Move is the big single. Did Maybe stick out to you on your re-listen? Were there any other tracks that stood out to you? And don't say the Good Charlotte song, because we're going to talk
you
about that
too,
on its
own. You know me too.
That track's fire.
You know, yeah. You know me too well.
Yeah, we can talk about it now. It's you know, Benji and Joel Madden of Good Charlotte on Jump, and it's so cheesy, but I knew you were going to bring it up if I didn't, Jake.
I think what I'm not trying to sound like a music intellectual of like, let's break down the silly song in a serious way. But I do think that Jump is kind of emblematic. But what I love about this album in general, in that like, yeah, it's really stupid, but it's so unself-conscious in its stupidity. And it's so like, it knows exactly what it is. And I think Pharrell's always been good at that, obviously. Like he's mm-hmm. literally made a career of that. But like this album especially, and I wonder if that played into some of the narratives of it, in the sense that it was just like, it was whatever it wanted to be and always did so.
Are you suggesting that the song with the Madden brothers is the big giant hat of this album for Pharrell?
I might be, but I do think that it's like, you know, you have to be, especially in 2004. It was, you know, you have to be, your band is this, or your band is this, or your band is this. And like, not to say you couldn't swap genres in the early 2000s, but like to be a hip hop guy making a rock album that talks about mental health, but then also has this stupid song with the Madden brothers. Like, I can see why it sort of tangled people up, even though I don't think it should have, but it was just how it worked then. But yeah, Jump stood out to me, obviously.
Sorry, but to cut you off, Jake, I'll let you. I have a question for Denz as a basketball fan. And I guess you too, Jake. This is my issue with Jump, is that I'm at a lot of basketball games and I watch a lot of basketball games on TV, and inevitably you're going to have songs played at Jump Balls. And I think everyone knows Criss Cross, Pass the Cavassier, Van Halen, those are the big ones. Why hasn't Jump by NERD and the Madden Brothers got its due as a Jump Ball song?
I have to assume it's because of the Madden Brothers. Yeah,
well, but probably, they killed it. But... it's obviously a travesty. I think you guys are going to need to talk to the boys on the team and get this to happen. Yeah. Talk to the boys. Just put me up. Yeah. Just pass me through. Pass me through. I'll do the talking. And we'll get it done.
That's it. All right. Sorry, Jake. You can continue your thought from there now that I've sufficiently derailed us. And Denz is texting me right now asking for Raptors numbers and stuff, trying to get Good Charlotte in the Raptors game mods. Yeah,
if we want to get the Madden brothers involved, new in-arena hosts, Benji and Joel Madden. Oh,
what else are they doing? Not much, I'd imagine.
But no, I think what grabbed me most about this album is how it's like the first I guess, three songs if we're going to talk seriously about Jump. But Don't Worry About It and Fly or Die are, we've talked this before about different albums, but I love openers that, on something that could potentially be seen as giant, air quotes, experimental, they place you in the album immediately. And what stood out to me the most listening to it was just that sense of identity and that sense of like, oh, I see what they're doing. This is great. But it's like immediate and I love it.
Yeah, I think one of the, so just to touch on a couple of the other songs, and I'm with you, Don't Worry About It and Fly or Die as a like first two to get in the album is great. I don't know that I would have put Jump right after that. But, you know, like I said, we talked some of the mental health stuff. You've also got Drill Sergeant is like kind of an anti-war, anti-conscription song. There's a hidden track at the end called Preservation that I think works like in retrospect as a good reflection on how In Search Of was received, and some of the anxiety that then comes from those heightened expectations after having some success. The other thing that stood out was like there are a bunch of tracks on here that I didn't realize were hidden tracks. Like I'm even in high school, I was very much a like put it on and listen to it start to finish person. So I didn't realize that Wonderful Place, Drill Sergeant, and Chariot of Fire all have hidden tracks at the end. I thought the album was just three songs longer. And one of them, you know, which is like the traditional hidden track, if you wait for a couple minutes after Chariot of Fire, is Find My Way, which not only is a cool like outro hook to end the album on, but it's just like a really, it's one of the best songs on the album, I think. And it's buried, not buried at the end. The hidden track thing in 2004 was still real. You know, if you slept on it or you miss it or you fire up Spotify because it's actually just like jammed in with Chariot of Fire on Spotify, you might miss this song, Find My Way, which I think is one of the strongest on the album.
Way is, I remember discovering this song because I used to fall asleep to this album. And you know, when you put your CD player on, kids, it's a CD, and you know, it has that many, they're little discs, and you put them in a little player and you just hit play. And this song's not listed on the cover or anywhere. The song came out like 2 minutes after, two or three minutes after. And I was like, what is this? I missed it. I probably didn't hear about it for like a few months. Because after the last song's done, I'm done. But I remember just encountering it. And I was like, this is beautiful. Like, this could have been easily track three, is where I would put it. But,
Jump should have been the secret track for the people who were still awake at the end. No, but I do think, you know, like obviously the hidden track thing is a bit of a relic of the CD era. But if this were a standard album closer, I agree. I would have it up. You know, I think Jake's point about the way this album starts with those two, I would probably have it up there. But failing that, it's a good bookend to the album with the way it starts. It just, you know, if someone's coming back to this album now, and I urge you to go listen to it, because I think you'll be, as Den said, kind of taken away by how modern it sounds, make sure you listen to the end of Chariot of Fire. It's not just 5 minutes of silence at the end. There is a very good track at the end there. Jake, thoughts on Find My Way or any of the other tracks we haven't touched on yet?
I want to touch on the way she dances for a second.
Yeah. Do you think it's a part two to Lap Dance off of In Search Of?
I don't know, but I love that it's on this record, I think is what I would say about it. I think it's, I like that, I know that this isn't a Pharrell solo record, and I don't want to keep coming back to just Pharrell and just...
I mean, it's the same guy. It's not...
No, I know, but like, I know there's other guys on this album. Like, it's not just him, but... I just love the way he sort of throws things like this in when he wants on his records. And like, he's just like, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how to put into words, but for such a like successful and quote unquote, like straightforward mainstream pop guy, he's always very good at throwing something in to surprise you. And I just think it's great. And I wish he did this kind of stuff more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good sign of confidence, right? When, you know, obviously at that point, the Neptunes had had, so like, Pharrell never had to sell an album of his own ever, and he would have been just fine for a really long time.
For sure.
But I think there is like a confidence in your sound and your creativity and yourself as an artist to just like constantly be doing that. Be like, okay, we had this formula that worked, and now we're going to tweak it and play our own instruments. And not only that, but we're going to throw a silly song on there. We're going to throw a song that sounds like The Way She Dances, and we're going to throw some, you know, really good ballads on there. So I think, you know, there are a lot of artists who do a number of different things, but there's an element of confidence there in the songwriting and the musicianship, I think, that really makes it stand out. And it makes it like a super re-listenable album. Like the album, for an album that's like an hour long, it breezes by really quickly. I don't know if the Spotify version is actually an hour long, but I know the original was like 61 minutes or something.
I think it's 55.
There you go. All right. People did not love this album as much as we did. We're going to talk about that after this. All right, so there were no real big single successes from this album in the U.S. The album did hit number 6 on the U.S. Billboard 200, but it only finished the year number 92 on the top R&B and hip-hop albums of the year. It only went gold. You think kind of the early 2000s, something like this, like everything was going platinum at that time as kind of the last hurrah of CD sales, but it only went gold, and it got mixed reviews. Rob Sheffield of Rolling Stone was pretty critical for a 3 out of 5, and I think, Jake, this is probably something like the reviews that you remember in your head. He wrote, "It's fascinating to hear these rap geniuses go undercover as a bar band you might hear rocking Journey covers in a bowling alley." And Jesus, because of the way that whole review's written, I can't tell if, like, rap geniuses is being facetious or just backhanded. Like, I can't tell if he's being an asshole about the rap genius part or if he's actually saying, like, these rap geniuses did this weird thing. Like, it's just like, it's a very snarky review. And while they did get some good reviews, like Entertainment Weekly gave them a lot of credit for being kind of complex and clever, Uncut called it the prog pop album of the year. You know, there were positive reviews, but some of them, including that Rolling Stone one, as well as Ian Cohen writing about them in 2008 when Seeing Sounds came out, there's a lot of like snark to it that the reviewers didn't seem to really engage with it all that seriously. And it's disappointing. And I don't really, I mean, again, we can go back to Jake. One of the things you wanted to talk about is that you remember a lot of the reception to NERD's first two albums and a lot of the talk around them in general, just kind of being like treating it a bit like a novelty or a bit voyeuristic, like, wow, hip hop guys doing doing rock music, and going back to the reviews, it certainly seems like that. And it's annoying.
Yeah. And like, weirdly, that stuck with me more than the record itself, which is odd. And I'm not sure why, but I feel like it kind of highlights the issue that I have with a lot of music writing, and that we're all obviously slaves to our own tastes. And like, that's fine. Like, we're all biased. We're all, you know, have our own things that we like. I certainly have enough hot takes about things I like and don't like on this show, but I feel like it does a disservice to write about bands like this in that way. And I think it's not necessarily wrong. And like, I usually like Rob Sheffield a lot. But I think that like that sort of dismissiveness and backhandedness of it is like just let them make, like, they made the record they wanted and it's awesome. Like, it doesn't have to be talked about in this, like, oh, they're the hip hop guy. Like, it's like a please like my sport almost. Like, you never see NHL players being so soft. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't get why that was the response, especially after the last, like, in 2004, like the 4 years of music previous was all like, you just came out of nu metal. And I know everyone was excited about like the White Stripes and the Strokes, but like, you're getting things that aren't nu metal and that you just bitched about. And they're like, oh, these fucking guys. It's like, I don't know. I still have a lot of time for it.
Yeah. Dens, you as like, so you, I don't know how old you are, but you would have been what, like in high school around this time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So do you remember like experiencing this album that way? Like as a black person who's into this kind of music and, you know, starting to figure out your punk tastes and stuff like that and being interested in making music yourself, do you remember that being a part of your experience with NERD, or is that just kind of something that you've recognized in retrospect?
Yeah, you know, like, it's interesting because, like, you mentioned that this was kind of like your segue from like rock and the people that listen to hip hop and like kind of like an entry point for you in hip hop. This was an entry point for me to rock. At that time, I was not listening to rock music. This was just the start of it. My friends didn't listen to anything with guitars unless it was soul or R&B, and definitely not this. I would be made fun of. And like seeing this guy do this music made it kind of okay. This is the biggest producer in the world that's doing this. I'm okay to listen to this, and I can point to Pharrell. And nobody can laugh at me because that's Pharrell. He's the biggest producer in the world.
Like that Clips album, you have to let me listen to this NERD album.
You have to let me listen to this. If you like grinding, you've got to let me listen to this. I remember reading reviews about this because I was really into like NME, Rolling Stone, and like I just remember everybody panning this, and I just remember feeling, am I living in a different world than everybody else? Because this is fantastic. Like, I don't know a bad song on this record. I even jump. I love them all. And I was like, why are people hating on him so much? Like, they just don't want us to do anything else. And this is the start of the chip. I don't know if you have noticed, I have a chip on my shoulder. It started there. So like, people need to let us do whatever we want to do. Like, why can't this guy do something else? Like, why does he need to release? Right. He wants to move first to appease you. He can do whatever he wants. Just go ahead and do whatever. I'm starting a band.
Yeah.
Like, it's just incredible, man.
Did you stick with NERD beyond this one? Like, obviously there's a big gap before Seeing Sounds in 2008 and then nothing in 2010 and then No One Ever Really Dies in 2017. So you were with them all the way through?
The whole way through. And I went through emotional rides with them because I really, really enjoyed the reissue for In Search Of. I love that they put live instruments on it. And then Fly or Die came out and they doubled down on live instrumentation, but then they left there for Seeing Sounds. So I was kind of disappointed with that because I felt like they succumbed to the pressure of having to do something else more hip hop leaning so people would accept them. And I was like, "What? If you're going to be gone for, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years, why are you going to come back with that? Come back with the same shit." Oh, sorry. I'm swearing.
No, you swear as much as you want, man.
Oh, fuck. Then why did I know that? But I was like, they came back with Seeing Sounds, and Seeing Sounds, like, I liked it. It had some cool records, but they obviously were, in my opinion, were trying to lean more hip hop. They were trying to find, double down on that bass, and I thought that was kind of unfair to them. But if that's what brought them there, what is what it is.
Yeah, and it's kind of kept going that way, right? Like, no one ever really dies in 2017 had Lemon, which, you know, if there's a song that has Drake and Rihanna on it, you've probably gone toward the hip hop or pop. And not that those artists are great, but, you know, in terms of what you're doing, that, you know, this was definitely NERD meeting everyone else on the hip hop side than bringing the hip hop side more to the middle. This, for anyone who doesn't remember, or as I think most people probably thought, think this is just a Pharrell song. This is the Lemon remix with Drake and Rihanna off of NERD's 2017 album.
Shout out to them people. Mad ethnic right now.
I get it how I live it. Wait a minute. I live it how I get it. Y'all don't really get it. I pull up in a Lemon.
Wait a minute.
Blocks get to spinning. Money 3D printing. Never had a Lemon.
Wait a minute.
Never been religious.
Wait
I just always had opinions. My daddy told me, listen.
Wait a minute.
You better get some money and I die, go to prison. So you see, yeah, I got rich and stay free. Free the dogs doing BIDs. I know everybody not like me. Hey, got a nerd to want a Bentley for a birthday. I said maybe I could rent it for your birthday. Matter of fact, I need a favor for the remix. Maybe I could get some 50s for your birthday. Hey, get a sneaker for your bae. Say we talk but we ain't speaking every day. And I know you know what P about to say.
Bath song, biting speakers in the face. 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 Bath song, biting speakers in the face.
I get it how I live it.
Wait a minute.
I live it how I get it. Count the motherfucking digits. I pull up with a Lemon.
Wait a minute.
Knocks her, she ain't living.
Wait.
It's just
wait
your
minute.
Eyes get acidic. And this ain't a scrimmage.
Wait a minute.
Motherfucker, we ain't finished.
What?
I told
wait
you we
minute.
Won't stop. A nigga by the business.
Wait a minute.
Like yours, which is winning.
What?
Wave
wait
hello
a
to the top.
Nigga,
the Vay run die.
Wait a minute.
Tell the paparazzi to get the lens right.
Wait a minute.
Got the window down top, won't lie.
Wait a minute.
Got the hazard on, only going five.
Bouncing around.
Speaking of songs that get played way too much at NBA games, that's a popular instrumental for during play, which at least it's all right. You know how the Raptors game ops do it. Anything with Drake in the mix.
Yeah, I was going to say, I blame Aubrey for that.
I need to talk to that guy directly about the so, popping up in my life.
Yeah, exactly. I like it. We all want Drake roughly in our circles.
Yeah, yeah. I think he just liked me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he'd like the confidence for sure, and the Raptors take. You could definitely be in that seat beside him, rubbing Nick Nurse's shoulders and clapping in Rodney Stuckey's face. You could play that role for sure.
That's it.
That's how you'll know when you go from 300 level to 100 level to courtside seats. That's how you know where you are in the Canadian music scene, I guess.
I think that's what I need to plot out. I need to find out how to get the way there, because, like, I'm working on my back row techniques, and I feel like, you know, Drake did an okay
there
job,
you go.
But there's different angles that he could have hit, and it might have helped us.
Exactly. Let's zoom out a little bit. Like we've talked about, kind of the legacy of NERD is a little mixed. I mentioned Ian Cohen's 2008 Pitchfork review, and he kind of like reduced their influence to skinny jeans and skate. And it's like, that's obviously not the case, even if they never really lived up to In Search Of or Fly or Die. Denz, you said you stuck with them all the way through. I'm curious as to, I guess you picked Fly or Die to do this episode on. I'm guessing it's your favorite. Do you see like a gap, like it's Fly or Die, In Search Of, and then a gap between the next three if you're like ranking your favorite NERD albums?
And I would say it's a big gap for me.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's a big gap. Like Fly or Die is, I don't know if Fly or Die is even my number one, but it's probably tied with In Search Of, the reissue. But Fly or Die is just the most important album to me. But I think Nothing I would probably put at somewhere near the bottom, because it just didn't hit the same way for me. Had some good tracks, but like Hot and Fun was the song I really remember from there. Seeing Sounds is probably in the middle for me. Like they had a lot of cool songs, like Yeah You was fire. I went to a few of their shows on this tour. Spaz was amazing, and their most recent album was actually really, really good as well. But they just never toured it, and like it kind of just went away. And I was so sad about that because I was waiting for them for years. I think like what 7 years. So their new album is actually really, really good. Newest album is like really, really good. But I think Nothing is the one that has the biggest gap. Like I think they really, really went in on being experimental with that record, and it was like way more jazzy, and like I just couldn't get with it. I couldn't get with it. They left everything. they left everything that they did, and they kind of did that. And again, they kind of just did the same thing where they made Hot and Fun with the first single, and when you set that as the tone, people don't really know what to expect. Like I'm hearing Hot and Fun and I'm thinking She Wants to Move. And okay, you're coming back right to what you're doing before? Great. This sounds like 2004 Pharrell now. Like we're back to Justified Pharrell. This is some good stuff right over here, but like it's the album that hit the same way for me, unfortunately.
Yeah. For me, In Search Of and Fly or Die 1-2. I lean In Search Of. I think just, you know, Rockstar Provider, Lap Dance, Bobby James, Truth or Dare. It's got Pusha T and Khalees on that track. It runs pretty deep. I mean, I love Fly or Die too, but I think because In Search Of is kind of where I first came to. And like I said, it was that kind of bridge album for me. I put that one ahead. Jake, did you go back and listen to In Search Of too, or do you mostly just check out Fly or Die for this?
No, I clicked through it as well. I didn't give it like a deep dive, but I think what's bothersome for me about this, about myself, is that in retrospect, this band and these albums fully feel like the kind of thing I would have been really into, especially in a way to be like, I can listen to more than one genre. I'm in high school. And now it's like, I didn't do it. And it's like, man, I've robbed myself of so many years of thinking this stuff was so good.
Everybody finds something when they need to. Yeah.
True, yeah, exactly.
Very true.
Someone they need them. Like, I know a lot of records that I went back to and I was like, why did I not listen to this? But I have to highly recommend In Search Of, man. Like, even the tracks that you didn't mention, Brain is another hit. Tape You. Tape You, Baby Doll. Like, Run For The, like, it's top to bottom bangers for sure. Not to get too much on it, but like, it's definitely top to bottom bangers.
All right, we got to circle back to Fly or Die. Dens, normally at this part in the podcast, we usually let the guest dictate this, but we take a song from the album we talked about to put on the show's mixtape. So any of the songs we talked about, anything off of Fly or Die, where would you lean for like the one song that best represents your attachment to the album or our conversation today? What should go on the mixtape?
It has to be Maybe. Maybe is the only track I know how to play on the drums all the way through. That's not my own, and I'm very good at it, or I'm okay at it. So it has to be Maybe, but that's a tough choice that you gave me there. But gotta go with Maybe.
Nah, that seems like the right choice for me. Jake, any objections there?
Not at all.
You're not gonna object?
No, I'm not.
Pick a fight with Dens. Let's go. We've got like 3 minutes left.
If you want me to get into a fight about putting Jump on the mixtape, I'll do it. But I don't know if my heart will be in it.
Man, people are going to be so like, so we didn't play a Jump clip anywhere in here because we had used all our clip spaces.
For that quality, you got to go hunting. Like you got to go find it yourself. It's so much sweeter that way.
Yeah, only the real Columbia House Party fans will go check out Jump. Those real Columbia House Party fans, by the way, can support the podcast at patreon.com/Columbia House Party, making that a great community in the Discord and sharing new music and supporting us in general. We also want to thank producer Dylan. This has been less off the rails than I expected, maybe. So, Dylan, you got an easier one today to fill in, to produce after. But this show would not be even like 30% of what it is without Dylan. So, thank you, Dylan, for that. And Denz, man, thank you so much. The Steph Curry of podcast guests.
Hey, you're welcome.
The Steve Jobs of podcast guests. Whatever else, what other names you want to throw out there? The Ric Flair. I don't know.
Ric Flair. Yeah. I'm looking for him. I gotta find them. Whoever you think is fantastic, I'm probably gonna try to find a way to associate myself with them against their consent.
There you go, man. This has been Denz McFarland, the vocalist and guitarist for the OBGMs, who have their album The Ends from Black Box. Check that out wherever you get your music. Follow the OBGMs at the OBGMs on all your socials. Their link tree is in their bio, and you can go to their OBGMs, theobgms.bandcamp.com. Denz, thanks so much, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate you guys. I'm definitely going to need to tune in next week.
Please try the fish.